Welcome back to Right Quick,
a bite-sized pop culture conversation with your favorite queer, unfriendly Black hotties.
And we are unfriendly today because Black History Month is only 28 days to some people. I'm Vance Go.
And I'm 90K. Yeah, fuck all that, right? Like, to some people, you know, since I moved back to the South, I do feel like Blacker than ever. And I did get my first gold tooth today, so I'm really feeling in my cultural bag as a Floridian.
Freak Nick approved gold tooth. If you laugh too loud, that shit's glimmering. Yes, glimmering in the light. Yes, yes.
I'm throwing my head back.
I love a cackle. I love a full-throated Charlie Kirk cackle. Just... Your fool.
It is very much a, yeah, that was definitely doing that Charlie Kirk become that pest dispenser, that human pest dispenser.
That unhinged throat.
That neck.
Right, that anaconda. That.
Oh my God.
All right, well, that was a spoiler for what we're talking about. What are we talking about today?
We're talking about Black history today. You know, it's always Black history around here. And I think a part of our pro-literacy advocacy is also rooted in Black history. I feel like we're always referring to Black history when we talk about literacy. And we're constantly mentioning people from history, so I wanted to take an opportunity to focus in on some people and maybe some people that we have not mentioned just yet.
Yeah, I appreciated you coming with this one because I'm like, yeah, we always talking about historical niggas and non-historical niggas that's here. But yeah, with that being said, I think it is nice to just like give space, like give an actual moment for the faux folks. Mm-hmm. So what was your criteria for choosing your people, your list? You said we got three, right?
Yeah.
So or about three,
Well, I said three, but...
I got three.
Oh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And so I chose three people. Like you said, we're always talking about history. So I chose to go local on this.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to choose some people close to home. There's so many historical Black icons to choose from. It was really, really hard to narrow it down. So I narrowed it down by city first. Jacksonville, where I'm from. And then Savannah is also where my dad is from. And that's kind of how I started narrowing my list down. What about you?
Okay, yeah. I don't know. I went broad, but I also just was like, people that we don't talk about. So one of mine is someone I know personally, because I'm like, right. Oh yeah, that's an easy one. Mm-hmm. And then the other two, obscure to me. I know some niggas is like, I know every factoid about Blacks. Okay. But yeah, one ties into the programming here. And then the other one, I just started reading it. I said, oh, this is fun. And I was like,
oh, cute. Well, exciting. Let's get into it. Why don't you kick us off?
All right, so the first, I actually put a duo only because they founded this thing together. So sure. It's like, how do you pick one? So I got John Russwarm and Samuel Cornish, and they founded the Freedom Journals. So This was in 1827, and it's the first Black-owned media, you know, newspaper.
Oh, wow.
So they started it initially because they wanted to like push back on like racist, you know, ideals and shit like that. But then they also were like, hey, we want to spread awareness about like popular events. So this was also global, not global, but you know what I mean? It was not only international. It was not only America. And then the other thing was, it was pro literacy and pro, like, you know, pro writing. So they were just trying to instill that, like, you know, Black Americans need to read and write. So obviously they only lasted 2 years, but then, like, they birthed a bunch of other Black publications. And then, you know, a lot of the OG Black publications were very, like, they would just be talking about average life of Black people. It would be like, oh, yeah, it might be like a mess. You know, we love mess. So there would be like a mess section where they're talking about, like, scandalous things happening in the community or beefs and stuff like that. So it really just paved the way for what Black media looks like now. And I mean, like, we probably wouldn't be here if shit like this wasn't started, you know?
Definitely not.
You know, so yeah.
Wow. That's what I love that. And they were founded in New York City, which is
New York. Yeah, cool. I meant to say that. Yeah.
Very cool. I love that. Yeah, Black media is so important. I definitely didn't know what the name of the first Black media publication, newspaper published in the United States. Wow. 1827. That's like 40 years before the Emancipation Proclamation.
They were freed men, and then what's his name? I believe it was Samuel. He was like the first nigga to graduate from a college. Like, so he was already like popping. And then the other one was a preacher.
Come on. I see that Samuel was light skinned.
I'm but sure.
But that nose, unmistakable, honey. Unmistakable. We love to see it. All right. Well, I'm going to start off with James Weldon Johnson. He's kind of a bigger one, but he is born in Jacksonville, Florida, born in 1871. So at the height of Reconstruction, almost. Reconstruction is such a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. He was the son of James Johnson, who was biracial, and his wife, his mom was from the Bahamas. Okay. He went to a school called the Edwin Stanton School at the time, was the first Black public school in Florida. Now it's the Stanton College Preparatory High School. And at, when I was in high school, it was the number one high school in the country. So it's gone on to be really incredible. He was a part of the NAACP, and as most people know, is the person who wrote the poem that went on to become Lift Every Voice and Sing, which is the Negro National Anthem. His brother, J. Rosamond Johnson, wrote the music to it. And that was originally a poem to honor Booker T. Washington, because they were on the Booker T. Washington side of the argument between him and W.E.B. Du Bois. He's from here. Myself and my brothers all went to a middle school that was named after him, James Weldon Johnson. And I have a fun fact that in Zora Neale Hurston's autobiography, Dust Tracks on the Road, she was like, this nigga ain't really Black because ain't nothing about him Black. And I just thought that it's so funny because she's like, he don't walk like a nigga. He don't joke like a nigga. She basically goes through all the characteristics that you can even tell the fairest skinned nigga is a nigga. And she says how he don't have none of that. And I also think that's so funny. And also being from Florida, being from Jacksonville, this is a wild thing for me to imagine.
Yeah.
That he didn't seem like a nigga from here. Okay.
I mean, yeah, Jacksonville, y'all's reach is long. Meeting Jacksonville niggas, I'll be like, let me put my vest on.
Better be careful.
look, I am. what's it called? I love reading in the Zora book how all these niggas know each other.
Oh, yeah. Well, they all went to New York. Yeah. And since she's also from Florida, she's from right down the road. Yeah. She's from like an hour away from here. So she also lived in Jacksonville for a short amount of time. She went to school here. I wouldn't be surprised if she went to this school. That might be how they know each other. Who knows? Right. And then they were also both in New York during the Harlem Renaissance. Jacksonville was a big stop on the way to New York for jazz musicians, poets, everybody during the Harlem Renaissance. A lot of people stopped through Jacksonville. So, yeah, they all knew each other.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll go on number two.
Let's do it.
All right. So number two, I got Mary Fields, otherwise known as Stagecoach Mary.
Hey.
All right. So she was the first black woman to be a star route postman for the USPS. So the reason they specify that was because basically if you had a long route where you had to, like, you know, go to different states and shit, they contracted you out. So she technically did not work for the USPS, but nobody wanted to do that shit because it was niggas on the road. And by niggas, I mean thieves and bandits. And then apparently the wolves were cutting up back then, too. So there were wolves, too. Mm. So mama kept that blicky on her. She kept that thing on her. And then, like, I read a couple of like excerpts about, like, some of her stories. I'm like, this bitch sound like a superhero. Like,
yes.
One time she said wolves tipped over her stagecoach and she had to stay up all night just like fighting wolves. But she didn't play. She liked to fight, she liked to drink. They had some dumbass rule where, like, a woman couldn't go to taverns, and then, like, the city was like, Mary could come. So, I think because she would shoot them. But anyway, although she liked to fight, Mama was passionate about children. So when she finally retired, she started a laundry service out of her house, and she used to babysit. Some of the people in the community, they did not like that she liked to fight and cuss and drink, so they would kind of be a little weary. But she was watching them kids, and
right.
The way that I like just to tie this into, like, us now, black women gonna keep a job. Not only that, the house that has the candy lady and or the babysitter, they doing hair in there, like that house. Mm-hmm. I think we all got that. We all got that in every community, every hood.
Absolutely.
Right? I lived in one. I think I told you I grew up in a house that had a my cousin, the daughter in the house, used to do hair. So people would be in there getting their hair done. And it was a babysitting house. My aunt had a daycare. So there were kids in the house that were from the daycare. So it was that joke that I think Bernie Mac told where they don't know, the cops don't know when to kick the door down. But yeah, like, I grew up in one of these homes. So, like, when I just saw how it ended, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to talk about this lady. But yeah, mama was a beast.
Yeah, I mean, Stagecoach Mary is everything. Fuck what they did by casting that light-skinned lady as Stagecoach Mary in The Harder They Fall. They cast Zazie Beetz as Stagecoach Mary.
Was she Stagecoach Mary?
A crime. Yes. She was Stagecoach
Mary? Bitch. Yes. I do recall this. In my head, I was like,
jail.
In my head, I swear I thought it was Regina only because...
No, that would have actually made more sense.
Yeah, she, no, in my head. Can I be like, why they make her a villain? Not Zazie Beetz.
Zazie Beetz. It's so much wrong there.
The let me stop.
Donald Glover, you will pay for your crimes.
okay. Yeah.
All right. My next person is someone who's actually still living. All cops are bad, but he's not a cop anymore because he's old and he retired. But his name is Nat Glover. He was the first black sheriff in Florida since the end of Reconstruction. Literally, there had never been a sheriff that was black in the entire state until 1995.
These stats always stagger me. They always shock me.
Isn't that wild? That's damn near 100 years.
Yeah, no, they
That's
always
damn
shock
near
me.
100 years.
Hollywood would be like, the first black woman to win this award. And I'm like, you trying to say the black woman ain't good at acting? Or you saying that y'all racist and y'all just ain't like...
Well, we all know.
We know. But they be so proud of themselves.
Yeah.
2026, the third black woman to win, and it's always the second one, supporting actress. Bitch.
Yeah.
Just two?
Yeah. So Nat Glover is like another hometown hero. He also ran for mayor. He didn't win because, you know, racism.
Yeah.
But it was the most expensive mayoral race in our city's history between him and the other person. He went on to become the president of Edward Waters University, which is a Gullah Geechee HBCU here. in Jacksonville. And the other reason I brought him up is because he's a member of Omega Psi Phi, and so is my dad. And he served as a special advisor to the president of my college that I went to, University of North Florida. And that the president of the college at the time was the former mayor from when he was the sheriff, Mayor John Delaney. Anyways, my mom had abandoned me when I graduated from high school and dropped me on my daddy. And my dad had to figure out in a couple of months how to get me to college. And we went and met with Nat Glover. And because they in the same frat, they got me a little bit of money for college. I got like, I don't know, $1,000. I didn't have a big fancy degree. It's very cheap degree. And so, yeah, that's special to me. Again, all cops are bad, but now he's just a grandpa. Yeah. Nat Glover, nice. Hometown hero.
Nice. My favorite thing the black people be doing, black men, just knowing somebody, because black men know everybody.
Hey,
knowing somebody is the most
one of the things I like about the Divine Nine, and especially because I'm not a part of the Divine Nine, but I've grown up entrenched in Greek culture, and so I know so many Greek people. It's almost, there's a thing, it's called a GDI, when you're very Greek affiliated, but you're not Greek yourself, a goddamn independent. That's what I am. Yeah, so my daddy knows him and that. Oh, well, he helped me, so.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. All right, so who I got next? So my number three is someone that I know personally, someone you know personally. My number three is, I call her my LA mom, but she is also my friend and a friend to a lot of people, a mother, you know, a lot of things. But anyway, her name is Skyra Martinez.
Yeah.
And she is one of the most interesting people I know. So she lives in LA, but she's from Canada. She was born to expat. So like she kind of grew up different than a lot of people. And, you know, she grew up in a community of just like people. They're expats. They're, you know, they're immigrants. But they're expats. And they essentially grew up on a commune where like everybody kind of took care of each other and was very pro-black. And so then she comes and she's been in LA. I don't know how long she's been in LA, but like less than 20 years. But anyway, she just kind of randomly picked up and moved to LA, and she ended up moving in this big like studio warehouse situation that is like, it's just real big. So anyway, she started doing programming for like, you know, just like she started like holding space for a community. So like, they just do programming. So they would have like hydroponics, like teaching people how to grow food from the water thing. I don't know. I don't understand hydroponics because I didn't go. But, you know, organizing space. One of my friends started a black healing space. That's literally how I know you.
Yeah. So, that's how like, we met.
Right. So many of my closest connections at LA are all just from this space. But the space, you know, we all talk about the space, but even deeper than that, like family dinner, you know, all the things. Yeah. But even deeper than that is the person that holds the space, the person that like created the space, that holds the space for everybody and like does not overly insert themselves when people are doing things, knows when to step back. So, yeah, just highlight Skyra Martinez. That's my dog. She's an amazing person, you know. And it's kind of like I know people recognize it, but I think that it's almost like a bunch of visible connections. Cause like, it's like, yo, any connection I made from that space wouldn't have happened, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. She's really incredible. We wouldn't have met if it weren't for the spaces that she facilitates. So yeah. So special. Wow. That makes me a little bit emotional because what I do like is some of these people are alive. Nat Glover is still alive. I wanted to make sure I included someone who is still alive.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. My last person is someone that I used to be around a lot when I was growing up personally. It's a woman. Her name was Maeveen Betch. And here in Jacksonville, she was known as the Beach Lady. She was an American environmentalist and activist, and her grandparents, mainly her grandfather, his name was Abraham Lincoln Lewis. He was a millionaire, and he founded Florida's second oldest African-American beach, which is called American Beach. And it's like an hour from my house or something. And then she is the great granddaughter of Zephaniah Kingsley and Anna Kingsley. And Zephaniah Kingsley is actually the slave owner that owned most of the land that Jacksonville sits on. He married, in quotes, one of his slaves, Anna Kingsley. And when he died, passed everything to her. Obviously, we don't really know what the situation was like, but that land stayed in their family with Black people. I grew up spending a lot of time on Kingsley Plantation. Kingsley Plantation is also like maybe 30 minutes from American Beach. I was just in the area last week. Kingsley Plantation is now obviously a museum. I spent so much time there as a kid. They obviously have like the big house. They have replica slave quarters that were out there. They have all the stuff about indigo dye. And this woman was the most striking person I ever seen in my life. She had this long gray, like one giant lock. And it was really long, and it was down to the ground, and she would wear it wrapped around her arm full of jewelry. She would also be covered in jewelry. She looked like she was going to like some kind of initiation for an African traditional religion all the time. She was the most beautiful elderly woman, because mind you, she was born in 1935, so she's an old lady when I am a kid. She's already an old lady when I know her. She passed away in 2005, but I used to see her at Kingsley Plantation. I used to see her at the festival that we used to have here called World of Nations. We still have that. She was just a community staple, and I feel so grateful to have been around to like literally touch some of the most important history and talk with and be inspired by. Because like when I've played a lot of witches in D&D campaigns, and I'm playing a witch that is directly inspired by this lady, because she just lives in my mind as like a spirit, an ancestor that I had the like great pleasure of coming into contact with when I was a kid, and being really proud of being Black, and even meeting this person who was literally the great granddaughter of someone who was enslaved. Mm-hmm. Like, that's wild. Anyway, also, she has a huge family. Her brother is like a jazz musician here. She has a sister who is still alive, who's an anthropologist. Just like they really care about Black history and Black art. And yeah, I feel really grateful to have been influenced by the Maveen bitch. What a fantastic lady.
Nice. That beach still thing?
Hmm?
The beach is still?
Yeah. I just drove by it last week. Well, anyone can go there now because segregation is over. But it might be coming back. Who knows?
I mean, yeah, I'm sure.
Who knows what's going to happen?
Nice.
Yeah, no, who did you have, Aaron? Did you have some people?
So I didn't know whether I didn't. So I have one contemporary and then one person who is no longer with us. So we have Jerry Lawson. He is an engineer from San Francisco by way of Brooklyn. He was the head of the team that came up with the idea of putting video games on separate cartridges. In 1970, games used to be locked into games, your hardware. You had one box of six games. That was what you had on it.
Wow.
He was the one that came up with the idea to start putting games on separate cartridges so you can start swapping them out.
Revolutionary.
And these guys put together, the console was called the Fairchild Channel F 1970.
Wow.
1976. Didn't do well, but it was followed up. The technology was followed up with by the Atari, which everybody knows and which became gaming as we understood it. So he was the person that came up with the idea of gaming on medium that can travel.
We wouldn't have Atari. We wouldn't have any game systems if it weren't for that thought. Separate games as a thought, period.
No, it's always like that. Like, we push it and we don't get the credit or recognition, but then the technology takes off and then we all know the technology.
Right. To the point where you then even know as a company. So you're like, who invented the cartridge? And someone would say Atari, which is not a person.
So. Well, that should tip you off that it's a black person.
I said, oh, it's unk. All right. And who else you got?
Contemporary, we have one, Asia Smith, the first black woman referee on a professional wrestling, on a regularly televised black wrestling promotion as of 2022. She was the first black woman to referee a match in WrestleMania. So yeah, she's a contemporary historical figure. She is alive and on Instagram right now.
Nice. Wow. Hot. Nice. Oh my goodness. Wow. I'm really about to get back into wrestling. This is pulling me. Is it time?
Yes, it is actually probably the best time for you to enjoy wrestling.
Ugh, exciting. This is exciting stuff. Well, shout out to us giving flowers to black people who are still here. Number one, so important. And also, I hope y'all learned a little bit today. Who are y'all's black history faves? Drop a comment wherever you listen to this podcast. Did we miss someone who you thought was important? Tell us. As always, today's episode is sponsored by Big Literacy. Big Literacy wants you to read.
Read now. Get a pizza party if you read 24 books.
25 books for a pizza party.
90 might buy it. 90 might put something on it.
I might put $5 on that personal pan. You know, personal pans are $8 now. So listen, I'm only going to be able to do part of it, but read those 25 books. 25 I'll send books. You a Let little
coupon. big thanks to our audio producer at Audio Adonis, Aaron Rand Freeman. I have been Vance Go, and you can find me on IG and Threads. It is Threads. At Circle of Thought. Where can they find you, friend?
And I'm Nandi K. Y'all can find me as always on Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at Nandi K A Y Y Y. See y'all.
See y'all. Love y'all.
Right Quick is a podcast for The Agenda Productions, created by Nandi K and co-hosted by Vance Go. Aaron Rand Freeman is our mouthy producer. Theme music by Luke Santi. Art by Sonia Honeycutt. If you like what you heard, subscribe, rate, review, and follow us on Patreon at The Agenda Productions.